You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Green Left Radio on 3CR. We're coming to you live from the studio on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung land. 3CR and Green Left would like to... We recognise that this show is being broadcasted from stolen land, and Australia was founded on the attempted genocide and dispossession of First People, and we recognise that this attempted genocide is ongoing. We pledge to actively support decolonisation, and we stand with all First Peoples in their struggle for justice and right for their land back.
So, good morning, listeners. This is Jacob here, one of your co-presenters today for the Green Left Radio program.
And I'm Chloe.
So, just to kind of announce what we have coming up for our program, and there has been quite a lot of political developments, including the Invasion Day protests, which we're going to give a bit of a wrap-up, and we're also going to be talking a bit about the bomb scare against the Invasion Day protest in Uluru, Perth. We're also going to be talking about the big kind of protest movement that's emerging in Minneapolis against ICE in the United States, which is probably one of the more...
Minneapolis,
which is one of the more important kind of ongoing struggles that is happening. In fact, I'll probably just say that, you know, we're at the start of January and kind of feels like almost 4 months of stuff has already kind of happened. It was only just the start of this of January that we had the whole kidnapping of Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela.
There's just been so many things happening.
It's hard to keep up. Mm-hmm. And then we've actually got a number of interviews that we have planned. So we're going to be speaking to Jonathan Strauss later on the program, and he's going to be talking about these new hate speech laws that are being proposed by the Albanese government, and we're going to kind of unpack a bit about some of the detail about this. Because there's a lot of discussion about this combating anti-Semitism, hate and extremism bill. Then we're going to be we'll have Palestinian May Saif, who's been a regular guest on our program, but we're going to be talking about the upcoming nationwide march against the Israeli president, Isaac Herzog, who is due to be visiting Australia from February the 9th to the 12th. And this is despite the fact there's a growing coalition of human rights advocates, legal experts, anti-Zionist Jews and community groups calling on Prime Minister Anthony Albanese to cancel his invitation. So I think, we'll be having a bit of a discussion about that. And we'll also probably play some different songs here and there between the news. But maybe we can kind of start off with a bit of a wrap-up on Invasion Day. So, Chloe, do you want to kind of talk about your impressions of the Invasion Day protests that happened on Monday?
Well, it's just like every year, Jacob. It's always really... I'm really proud to be part of those marches, and it's always really inspiring to see tens of thousands of people from all walks of life march with First Nations people, it was massive. I think here in Nam there was well over 50,000, although some reports are saying it was 100,000. I mean, I actually couldn't see the end of the crowd. That was despite the extreme heat. The organisers of the rally organised like all these little water stations, which were really great. The speeches were really empowering, and I think, yeah, the fact that we outnumbered the racists, what a big humiliation for them. I didn't even know that they were gathering in the city, but yeah, it was probably stupid of them to march, the March for Australia protesters, to actually organise a rally on the same day as the biggest anti-racist rally of the year, that is Invasion Day. Yeah, I guess we could say more, but what did you think, Jacob?
Yeah, so giving a bit of a roundup of the different protests. So there was a protest in Dijang in Geelong, which actually drew over 1,200 people, which I think is actually quite a good kind of a very good effort. So 1,200 people were there, and I think we also would say, I would also probably say my impression of the numbers in Melbourne was probably around 40,000 to 50,000, or possibly could have been higher. Sydney definitely had very large numbers. And I think in Sydney, I think the very impressive thing about the Sydney protests is we've been talking about this on our program for the past several weeks, but in Sydney, they're very much trying to push these really terrible kind of anti-protest laws to kind of restrict the freedom of assembly. Now, the protest wasn't legal in any way. In fact, one of the things we reported on last week was there was a bit of a victory in terms of being granted the kind of right to kind of protest. But I think, you know, I think that has to kind of be put into context as well. I mean, the fact that the government gave the right to protest is that, you know, at the end of the day, if they made it illegal, people would have still showed up, and it would have been a massive humiliation for the government. So I think it shows the kind of strength of the First Nations movement that, you know, the government has essentially had to be put on the back foot. On the other hand, they are trying to pull all stops to repress the Palestine movement, and it'll be interesting to see how the protest against Isaac Herzog will play out, because specifically Isaac Herzog will be visiting Sydney. He will not be visiting, I don't think he'll be visiting Melbourne or any of the other cities. I think he might be visiting Brisbane as well, but that's as far as I kind of know. But I guess we'll be chatting a bit more with May Safe about that. And
because we're still protesting against his visit in
even though
he's not visiting.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a nationwide protest, so there'll be different protests happening at the same time. Mm. Then the other thing I just want to unpack, want to kind of talk about the March for Australia. Now, I think the March for Australia was definitely a total fizzer. And there's a few things going on here. I mean, one thing is, I don't think we can underestimate the kind of impact of the kind of far right and also the kind of right wing, you know, kind of the growth and support for right wing kind of nationalism. You know, the nature of capitalism means that it is creating, you know, a growing kind of base for these kind of reactionary ideas. And ultimately, One Nation is still growing in kind of support. But, I mean, it's also unclear what that actually means, because we're in a political situation where the Liberal vote is essentially collapsing over time. And so a lot of people who would vote for the Liberal Party are, in a sense, switching to the One Nation. We don't know quite yet. It remains to be seen whether you know, One Nation is gaining genuine sort of new supporters that weren't supporting One Nation before. So that's something that we have to keep an eye on. And but I think, you know, I think it is a big humiliation that they weren't able to show up. They weren't able to draw in significant numbers, especially on Australia Day of all days, because, I mean, Australia Day is very much a rallying point for right-wing nationalists. And in fact, actually just a bit of personal experience of when I was at the Melbourne protests, I mean, I did actually, on the streets, I did encounter some quite unsavoury right-wing kind of figures, including receiving some harassment.
Along the lines of
people sort of saying Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi. But then, though, of course, there were definitely me and another comrade. We did run into people who were outright fascist in nature. In fact, they were sort of throwing out sort of anti-Semitic slurs and all sorts of, yeah, kind of even homophobic sort of comments as well. So I think, yeah, there was definitely there was definitely element, but also I think the kind of open kind of organising of Nazis has also been put a lot on the back foot because of a lot of the new legislation that the government's trying to introduce. So yeah, it's sort of, yeah. So I think there does remain to be seen. It is, but I think it is definitely a big victory that we outmobilized the far right significantly in a lot of ways. But yeah, I think the Invasion Day protests it was definitely fantastic. And I think, you know, sovereignty has never been ceded, and I think it's going to be important to continue to mobilise First Nations people. There's another kind of important story that has come out of this, but maybe we could play a quick announcement, and then we'll move on to that story, and I'll start it off.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the apartheid-free zone movement.
You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM, and you're joined today by myself, Jacob, and Chloe. So for the next part, next news story, so we just gave a bit of a wrap-up on the Invasion Day protests and also how much significantly larger they were than the far-right protests. But on the other hand, there was a pretty terrifying story that came out of the Invasion Day rally in Buluru. And that is, and it's being reported in Green Left, which in the article titled First Nations People Demand Urgent Investigation into Invasion Day Attack. So essentially, there was a homemade bomb was thrown into the crowd at the start of the rally at Forest Place in Buluru, Perth. Now, fortunately, of all things, the homemade bomb did not detonate, but WA police have confirmed that it was designed to explode on impact. Now, in other words, it could have caused mass casualties. And of course, one of the other elements as well of this is the fact that the police have taken this kind of, taken this threat not that seriously
lightly,
at all.
Yeah.
Very lightly. And in fact, it's, having been to Western Australia, you know, the WA police force there's a lot of over-policing of First Nations people. And yet, when it comes to find like a bomb, it's sort of like, oh yeah, let's just stand around and just wait for something to happen, which I just think is completely outrageous. And in fact, you know, they would not, especially in light of the whole Bondi massacre, you know, you'd think that there would be some level of reaction, but it's a very kind of muted kind of reaction. And very much a lot of the First Nations activists are very much calling that this incident must be fully investigated as an act of terrorism and a hate crime against First Nations people and protesters. And, you know, the police and government and media response that has been stated in the 24 hours following the incident had very much downplayed the threat. And of course, I think, you know, one of the things that is being sort of highlighted is one of the reasons that the police and all the kind of institutions are not taking it seriously because it targeted a First Nations event. If this targeted any other group, we would have been seeing a very different kind of response. And of course, the other thing as well is that, you know, the rally organizers did actually attempt to communicate with the police in the lead up to the protest because they had received threats around the protests, etc. And in fact, the police had actually
received bomb threats.
Yeah, received, but they had so received the police they had knew. Received threats in the lead up, not necessarily bomb threats. I think it was threats just in general, just because in general, you know, Australia is like kind of racist country and so on. And Sam Wainwright, speaking on behalf of Social Science, when the police started pushing people off the stage, he told Green Left that the police were initially uninterested. Reliable reports suggested the device was thrown in the crowd at around 12:15 p.m. and given to the police around 12:30, but it was not until 12:50 p.m. that the police decided to evacuate the space. This delay, combined with elders being shoved off the stage, fueled suspicion among part of the crowd that the police were looking for an excuse to shut down the event. Since then, sections of the mainstream media have downplayed what would have immediately been labelled a terrorist event if it had been directed at different victims. So a few other kind of responses that have been sort of highlighted here is that Independent First Nations Victorian Senator Lydia Thorpe is calling on the federal Labor government to lead a comprehensive response as it did following the Bondi attack. And I'll just make one last comment before passing on to Chloe, and Chloe might be able to draw on a bit more that's sort of said in this article. But I think it's quite unprecedented, going back to this sort of question of the far right threat. I mean, I think it is quite unprecedented to kind of go to a protest and even experience the risk of a threat of a bomb. Like, for a lot of activists I know who have been, you know, in the movements for better parts of decades, I mean, often the kind of worst violence you will experience often happens from the police themselves, especially in response to police repression. But the idea that there could be some radicalized figure out there making homemade bombs and potentially launching it at a protest, I think is kind of very reflective of the political times we're living in, especially with the rise of the far right that is sort of happening globally. So yeah, even though the March for Australia didn't obviously reflect large numbers, this definitely reflects that there's something in the air in terms of the growth of reactionary politics.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people have reacted quite strongly, not only to the bomb itself, but to the police's response or lack of response. I was talking to my friend about this and he was saying, and I agree, that we don't expect the police to be on our side and do anything other than stand with the rich and the reactionaries. But their response to what happened in Perth is so pathetic, but also really shocking, especially when the government says they are trying to combat hate and extremism through these new laws. Which we're going to unpack later. But it took the police more than 48 hours to announce it was investigating the person who threw that bomb into the Invasion Day rally in Perth. And we understand that this is the typical police respond to violence and terrorism directed at us, really. It's always downplayed by them, and even the media are slow to act when, say, Nazis beat up First Nations people, including women, at a sacred site, like at Camp Sovereignty, like they did last year as part of the March for Australia rallies. So they claim to be combating anti-Semitism, but when actual Nazis, whose foundational ideology is anti-Semitism, are beating up people, they don't seem to take that seriously. What does Julian Seagull have to say about them? Yeah, we just got to ask, where are governments and their media directing hate? It seems they're whipping up racist hate against certain communities, and when they do, they're not really brought before the justice system. And we never hear the term terrorism being used when it's violence against black and brown communities, even when it fits with the legal or political definitions of the term. But yeah, we're glad that the bomb did not detonate in the end and everyone was safe. Like, we know a few of the people who actually encountered that bomb, like the person who it actually fell at her feet. We know that person. And yeah, so many people could have been killed. So we're really happy that everyone's safe, but we'll continue to be outraged and call out the police, even though we know that their job is not necessarily to stand up for us, but it is still pretty pathetic. We're going to go to a quick break, and maybe we'll go to a song next before our first interview.
Well, actually, our first interview is like 20 minutes away.
So oh, okay. Play a song first, you'll we'll be hearing some... more from us then. Yeah. You'll be hearing more discussion. We'll be back soon. Don't go anywhere.
Three CR. Stay tuned. Stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources, and we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our lands.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now to step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our lands back. We demand to stop Black Death in custody.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. Good morning, listeners who are just tuning in. We are going to be announcing some good news after this song we're about to play. This song is from Green Left's Matt Ward's music column, 10 New Protest Albums of the Age of AI. I'm going to play a track by Maori musician Thea from her 2025 album Girl in a Savage World. The track is called Hoki Wenwa Mai, which means return the land. And on this track, Thea sings, "You wield your guns, you shot our sons, you made us rot in all you've done. Cut down your trees, brought your disease, you will not bring us to our knees." And discussing her LP, she said, "I really don't care if people like it or don't like it. As soon as you have Indigenous women speaking candidly about misogyny or colonization, you get so much praise and camaraderie from fellow Indigenous folks, but you also get people spewing hatred." The album came 3 days after the government removed a requirement ensuring school policies, plans, and local curriculums reflect local Maori customs, knowledge, and worldviews. So we hope you enjoy the song.
Your world us The revolution in Rojava is a beacon of hope for the world, putting direct democracy and feminism into practice on a broad scale. This radical attempt at social transformation now faces huge challenges, including daily attacks by the Turkish military with little outside recognition or aid. Show your support for Rojava by joining Northeast Syria Solidarity, or NESS, and help ensure the survival of this inspiring experiment in social change. NESS sends aid, raises awareness, and builds solidarity. Get involved at www.nesssolidarity.org.au. NESS is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and the track before you heard was Hoki Wenwa Mai, which means Return the Land, by Maori artist Thea. And we want to bring you some good news. So Invasion Day protest organiser Gundit Mara woman Tani Onus Brown was part of winning a case in the federal court a few days ago, just in time for Invasion Day. The federal court ruled against these extraordinary Victorian police powers in designated areas. So it was the case was by the Tani and Onus Brown, Benny Zabel, and David Hack. Well, I'll just give you a little bit of background. So last November, the entire Melbourne CBD became a designated area for 6 months, and the federal court found on January 23rd that the six-month declaration was unlawful and invalid. It was the Human Rights Law Centre that represented these three activists, and this ruling means that it will be much more difficult for Victorian police to declare designated areas and at the drop of a hat and exercise extraordinary warrantless powers under the Control of Weapons Act. So the judge found that police can only do so where the designation is necessary to address the risk of weapons-related events offences in the area. Onus Brown told 3CR Radio a few days ago that the challenge was also about the extraordinary stop and search powers given to police and their power to direct people to leave certain areas if they refuse to remove a face covering. So the judgment meant that the six-month declaration ended early, but the protest organisers are still concerned, and we're still concerned about the impact that these ever-expanding police powers, what they will have on protest rights. And it's concerning because, we want to make sure that these special powers were not in place for, big large-scale protests like Invasion Day and the upcoming Palestine rallies. But it is still a significant win, even though we didn't get everything we wanted. So the police can still ask people to remove their face coverings, their masks. But we still need to celebrate it as a win because, it's everyone should be able to be respected and march with dignity and not be subjected to these intrusive police powers. So well done to those three activists who took on the Victorian police and partially won. I would say that's quite a big win. Thank you for doing that. And I hope listeners can also take joy in these little victories that we're having against the sort of increasing repression against the right to protest. All right, we're going to go to a quick break and we'll be back with more Green Left news.
Did you know that Western Sahara is Africa's last colony? The issue of Western Sahara was raised in the Eddie Mabo case referencing Terra Nullius. Western Sahara is illegally occupied by Morocco. Indigenous Sahrawis are denied their right to self-determination. France continues to veto United Nations human rights observation in Western Sahara. Sahrawi people are being killed by Israeli drones. Like to learn more? Become informed. Become an Australia Western Sahara Association member at awsa.org.au. Australian Western Sahara Association is a 3CR supporter.
Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. So I want to give a bit of an update, drawing on an article that was published in the People's Dispatch, but many of our listeners are probably following what's happening in Minneapolis, which is very much, obviously probably one of the big kind of political developments that has happened in the past month. And it's also quite horrifying what is happening in the United States, where on January 24th, you have the killing of the nurse Alex Pretty at the hands of the US Customs and Border Protection, which happened on January 24th. And of course, this happened in the context of in less than 24 hours after a historic general strike against Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE, in Minnesota. And I think, this is very much has marked a very major development in terms of the struggle between federal immigration enforcement and organized resistance in Minnesota. Now, this is the city is very much, they're demonstrating its ability to mobilize at a scale that can disrupt the economy. And of course, shockingly, they had to wake up to the following morning to yet another killing of a community member by a federal agent. Now, this follows the killing of Renee Good, which happened earlier this month. And some of the more outrageous things that have kind of come out of this is that the right have attempted to kind of play this sort of narrative. And in fact, this narrative reflects a really big contradiction in US politics, especially in amongst the right. So recordings from the scene of the incident seem to corroborate the victim family's claims against the government narrative. Essentially, in the case of his killing, video shows him at the scene recording with his phone camera and with seconds of Pretty trying to assist a woman that had been assaulted by federal agents. Pretty was pepper sprayed, tackled by multiple agents, and shot to death. And I guess evidence suggested he posed no legal threat. Now, the one thing that is sort of that the right is sort of trying to claim is they're trying to claim that ICE had to they had to take action against this guy because you do realize he was actually holding a gun. Now the other hand, he was a lawful gun owner with a permit to carry, but the video evidence shows that his weapon never left his holster until the CBP agent removed it. So his weapon was actually removed before he was shot to death. Like, that is just completely outrageous and inhumane. But also the fact that the government is using the presence of a gun as a retro justification for his killing. This is the same group of people who will constantly argue for people's right to kind of bear arms and so on. Like, the hypocrisy is off the roof. And in fact, the right wing has also attempted to support the killings of African Americans at the hand of armed vigilantes, saying that, it's the right of people to own a gun and, they were just defending themselves and so on. So I think, this is quite horrifying in a lot of ways. But I think probably the most hopeful thing is there is another call for another general strike that actually should be happening tomorrow. It's been called for the 30th of January, and it is the 30th of January right now, but it will be the 30th of January from tomorrow in the United States. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of the protest. I think the fact is resistance is growing, and I think in the United States, the contradictions of the Trump presidency are very much opening the doors for new kind of resistance. And but also it is, I read a kind of interesting article as well, but really One of the other big issues is the fact that, you know, the ICE is essentially acting like a paramilitary force in the United States. And it essentially plays this role of terrorizing the community. But also it's playing the role of actually killing innocent people. In addition to the its dehumanization of migrants. At the same time, it's quite clear that there's this growing public support for abolishing ICE. Yet, of course, we all know that the Republicans want to just keep massively increasing funding, etc. But the Democrats are not even putting up any real serious fight in terms of opposing ICE. And in fact, the actions of the Democrats have kind of suggested that they've attempted to discourage the kind of protesting. And while they have made some criticisms of ICE, not many of them have been willing to go as far, apart from, you know, a number of the left-wing sort of Democrats. Most of them have not been willing to go as far as talking about abolishing ICE. And also, I think it can't be forgotten that it's been under Democratic administrations that funding for ICE has increased. And essentially, they have been responsible for, you know, contributing to the monster that is being unleashed on ordinary working people and the oppressed in the United States. So, yeah, we should give all the solidarity to activists in the United States and people kind of resisting this kind of level of authoritarianism and that is happening in the United States right now.
Yeah, this is murder with impunity. It's actually quite sickening, the lies that have been told by the administration about the killing of the 37-year-old ICU nurse Alex Preti. Quite shocking. I think there are more strikes being called. So on the ground, protesters are already calling an expansion of the general strikes. So cities like New York, Boston, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, many others have broken out in all these spontaneous protests after Preti's killing. I guess like Trump's, I'm reading, we've covered a bit of what's happening with ICE and the Border Patrol agents in Green Left, but this Trump's aggressive and racist policies, like his foreign ones, are really based on militarism. The use of these masked ICE and border patrol agents, they're unaccountable to local or state authorities. It really shows illegal. It mirrors the illegal military operations that they're performing overseas. Like in Latin America, like in Venezuela, in Palestine. And more demonstrations against state violence have been called, particularly around the Martin Luther King holiday. And there are, this movement to defend each other's neighborhoods. Malik Meyer, who's a Green Left journalist, he's saying that it echoes the Underground Railroad, the secret network of safe houses and routes to help escaped slaves before the U.S. Civil War, which is quite interesting. Anyway, we'll go to a quick break and maybe a song, and then we'll come back to you with our first interview. Stay tuned with Green Left Radio on 3CR.
Always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out. Sham contracting arrangements.
On 8:55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
supposed to be doing that? Okay, sorry. Okay, we're starting now. We're Bikini Kill, and we want revolution! Girls down there!
You were just listening to Double Dare by Bikini Kill. So I hope that woke listeners up. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, your Friday breakfast show. And you're joining Jacob and me, Chloe, in the studio. And we're excited to be joined by Jonathan Strauss for our first interview. Jonathan is a long-time education worker, a workplace and community organizer, and dad. He's just moved to Brisbane after living in Cairns for 18 years. He was president of the National Tertiary Education Union at James Cook University in Northern Queensland for a decade before moving. And he also worked for years with Rural Australians for Refugees as National Secretary, President and Vice President. He's on the National Executive of Socialist Alliance, and we welcome you back to the show. Good morning, Jonathan.
Hi, Chloe. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me on.
Now, we invited you on to talk about Anthony Albanese government's combating anti-Semitism, hate and extremism bill. Well, it's not no longer a bill. It's now passed both houses of parliament. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that means that the law has now changed. And last we had you on the show, it was still a bill being proposed. What can you tell us, Jonathan, what can you tell us about the law, and why does it represent a fundamental attack on democratic rights?
Yeah, thanks, Chloe, and it's also the case that this long description. I have taught in the area of political science as well, having qualified a PhD in that area, so I actually can discuss this most of all politically. I think really we've got to look at laws in terms of what they are on about. they are really, really, they are, one of the things about laws is effectively, they are meant to be coercive. They provide coercive powers through the chance of arresting people, jailing people, etc. But that's actually also to enforce consent. So this is not decided. And the question is, will we consent to what's going on? Because what's going on, in fact, in practice, politically, is this is openly against the Palestine Solidarity Movement. This is where it's come from. This is what the supporters of the Israeli state have been calling for, both, I guess, those who openly identified as Zionists, supporters of Zionism, and the government more generally, in the fact that it actually is supporting the Israeli state, including providing weapons parts to the Israeli state. It's not just about extremism, and in fact, you've got to ask then, if people talk about it, you always got to ask the question, to whom? Is it something extreme? It's also a certain kind of development. Up to now, we've seen a lot of attempts to suppress, say, the actions of environmental activists, particularly their direct action tactics, mostly from the state governments, but now we have this law. Because what we're looking at is, if you want to change the world, you need popular, democratic, powerful movements. And this law is targeted most especially, and this is in the words of the Attorney General, in particular when Michelle Rowlands, and she was interviewed on 7:30, but what she was asked, if people, opposed to genocide, and since that brought into the question the existence of the Israeli state as it is now, as an apartheid state, and if Jewish people said they were feeling harassed or intimidated by that, would that trigger the process? And she said yes. So that's its political operation. Look, legally, I definitely take my lead from people like the constitutional lawyer Anne Toomey, and she's been writing in a number of spots, including Conversation, Pearls and Irritations and the like. Greg Barnes has been speaking on this. Nick Hanna, who's the lawyer for the case against the New South Wales laws that are being introduced, did a seminar last night, which I need to catch up on. The other thing is, talk about catch up on, this is all happening in incredible flurry. The laws themselves introduced within a week, more than 140 pages in its initial form, and it included the gun laws. Then amended, and the amendments were very substantial, and it went into Parliament at the beginning of last week. It's hard to keep up, and so on. So to keep all that up, I want to focus, just in terms of your question of how it's an attack on human rights, just on the organisation ban laws, which effectively introduced the central concept of hate crime that then also applied in areas around the question of symbols. So the same banned hate, so-called hate, ostensibly hate crime groups, and also migration laws as well. So there's probably three kinds of things. I'll go through those briefly. One was raised by Ben Saul, who's the UN reporter on the question of anti-terrorism laws and democratic rights, and he points it out in his initial submission, and this goes across some different provisions of the existing laws, because while the initial one actually included a racial vilification more around promotion, what was said to be promotion of hatred or ideas of superiority, he pointed out that in legal terms you really need to focus on incitement, something more about actually provoking activities, provoking actions, because otherwise you really cut across actually human rights in terms of freedom of expression. But because that's in the objects, it doesn't actually isn't in the law that you'd actually be, in a sense, something you'd be charged with. The key question probably folds around the issue of how they're trying to define hate crime. The one question is the concept of hatred. I mean, the New South Wales Law Commission was asked to look at this sort of question a couple of years ago and just said hatred is not a good idea as a concept in law because it's just too much different understanding of it in society as a whole. The second thing they've done, and what they actually did was they took some of the provisions out of the racial vilification laws that had to drop because people were just pointing out how undemocratic that was, and put it into the banning of organisations law instead. But they also put in this thing saying that one of the things that would be involved would be people having suspected of breaking, as I'll get to shortly, but probably talk about in a minute, but breaking state or territory laws. And there's actually a lot of different laws, and some of them have concepts like severe ridicule as opposed to other kinds of conduct, which it raises issues about how the law would work. But the key question here is actually that they actually took over a concept about the reasonable person who's you're going to judge whether or not someone is fearful for their safety or intimidated and some other kinds of similar things is no longer just a reasonable person in general, which itself is a problematic concept, you could say, in the sense that you apply that norm to, you could say, basically, it's not taking account of First Nations people. It's the reasonable person typically would be someone in a colonial white framework, for example, and I'd be able to divisions there as well. But now it's a targeted group. So that sounds like maybe, oh, we're going to take account of people's experiences. But the other side of that is actually it's even more obvious how this reasonable person is socially constructed. And this is particularly clear. There's an open campaign to socially construct Jewish identity to include Zionism. And this occurs around claims that, a majority of Jewish people, which, look, is only, to the extent it's been true, has only been true really since the Second World War, and in any way that support is fading, but somehow because they might support Zionism, the ideology of settler colonialism in historic Palestine, that means somehow that's part of their of Jewish identity. That's one problem. The second thing is the use of what's called the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance working definition of anti-Semitism, which actually has some examples that actually tend to, if you ignore its provision around using context, equate criticism of Israel with anti-Zionism, and certainly that's something you see politicians trying to falsely do all the time. This all cuts across political communication, and Timmy points it out very well that in fact what it means is where normally you could criticise, wherever you can actually try to say that the ideology that supports an ideology of an ethno-nationalism is actually somehow part of the identity of the nationality or the ethnicity, suddenly you have this situation where criticism of the nation state suddenly becomes, which is obviously political in communication, suddenly becomes unfree again. Whereas we do at least have an implicit right from the Constitution around elections that in fact should be free. That's quite complicated to explain, the other thing is just that it says not only formal members but informal members and of groups that are banned are then subject to being prosecuted and jailed for 7 to 15 years, depending on the situation, also elements of support. So, and really all of this is, there's no limit indicated in what that actually involves. And in fact, informal just means not formal. So I'd say, basically any form of association, I guess, joining a march for Palestine could perhaps be seen as being part of some group that supports Palestinian solidarity, which they then proceed to ban. So that becomes a really basic problem of knowing, where the limits lie.
Yeah. So thanks for that kind of very kind of detailed explanation going through kind of all the kind of bill. I guess I want to kind of ask about this, the question of kind of the repression of the Palestine movement. Very much how is, you know, how are they going to kind of, how is this bill going to be used as an attempt to consciously kind of repress the Palestine movement, even though, as we'll go into another question later, it is obviously targeting groups on the other end of the political spectrum, not just necessarily the far left.
Okay, I think it mainly does it by the fact that a lot of people discussing it is very ambiguous and uncertain what will happen. So everyone will be asking themselves, what can I say? What can I do? I don't know, because I don't know what they will use, either from the past. Well, sorry. So what they're also saying is they can take what happened in the past plus what they think will happen in the future and use that to decide on whether or not there'll be a ban on the group. So firstly, you had no idea that this was coming up in the past. So, you know, things may have been said in a way which they will use, and so on. There's a tremendous amount of ambiguity and uncertainty. It all operates on the basis of suspicion and prediction. There's no requirement that actually be any crimes need found to have been happened for a group to be banned. So, but mainly, as I said, it's this question of enforced consent. People will worry and not say things because they worry that the ban will apply, and then everyone will be considered to be associated with these groups in some way, perhaps as an informal member, perhaps in providing support or whatever. That's one thing. A second thing, is that when, because what it says, basically, it's all carried out in the executive in the state. ASIO is going to draw up a proposal that a group should be banned, and then the minister who is governing the federal police actually makes the decision. They have to refer to a couple of people about that, but, you know, basically the Attorney General, and we hear what the Attorney General thinks. Yes, you can ban Palestine groups, Palestine solidarity groups. They're saying that there's a genocide, and that this brings into question the right of a state to exist, you know, because, you know, which is actually what the, you know, like the US Declaration of Independence says, tyranny is grounds for rising against a state. So, you know, if genocide is not grounds for rising against the state, it's an interesting question. And that, all of this proceeds with no procedural fairness applying against the minister. Now, what exactly that means in terms of any sort of judicial review, I think, is unclear. But, I mean, at least, obviously, it protects the minister from making a decision that's not procedural fairness. That basically means you don't get heard on the question. This could be compared with something like what's happening in Britain with Palestine Action. Now, that's been banned as a terrorist organisation. The decision's wrong because it basically hasn't conducted terrorist activities, for starters. But in Britain, at least, you know, they've had some court hearings, and one of the grounds that the judicial review is going to go ahead is because Palestine Action was not heard on the matter. Whereas here, that's not even a requirement. So it's not even clear to me that, in fact, you could even go and say we weren't heard on the matter, therefore this should be reviewed. But that's because that's actually allowed. One other big issue is it's about thought conduct, about what people express rather than what they do as such. And it's criminalised regardless of intent. The intent's only relative to the degree of punishment. One of the things that come up on the left is some people saying, oh, well, can this be fixed? I have a feeling I've probably spelled out why it can't be fixed in terms of the question of defending democratic rights. Can it be fixed in terms of the fact that it's applying only to questions of race, ethnicity and nationality, and not also addressing questions like the hatred against trans people and the queer community more generally and so on? I think in this government we just have to remember that fundamentally we can't rely on the state to defend our democratic rights. Mm. We need to win. If we want to win, we want to win politically. That is, we want to overturn the old social structures, the old set of ideas and ideologies that are dominant now, which are against people's democratic rights. We need to win that politically. That's the fundamental thing that needs to be done.
Well, this is all very interesting, Jonathan. And for listeners just tuning in, we are Green Left Radio. We are speaking with Socialist Alliance activist Jonathan Strauss about the new legislation which passed the Senate on Tuesday night, allowing the federal government to ban groups deemed to spread hate, with leaders to face up to 15 years in prison. Jonathan, actual hate groups like neo-Nazi groups, for example, the National Socialist Network, are being targeted under this law. What are your comments about that? Do you think this effectively addresses the issues of the far right?
I wouldn't say so. And as I said, if things are really determined politically, then you just have to ask how you could argue this has an effective role against the far right in the context of the really muted political and media response to the attempted bombing of Invasion Day rally in Borloo in Perth. That's where I would sort of say, if you want to look at how, one of the ways this is working out in practice. So the National Socialist Network, you know, announced it was dissolving itself. And look, you can see that they picked that, yes, indeed, they would be up for prosecution under the laws. But this society is riddled with racism. So they can operate in other ways. They will be able to operate in other ways. So in introducing laws, it's certainly a statement about, from current establishment politics, from the Qatar Labour Party's politics, that doesn't want fascist tactics. What do they fear? Well, I actually say what they fear is the backlash that's possible through a strong solidarity an anti-racist movement such as the Palestine Solidarity Movement is and could develop into. At the moment, they think they can defeat it in another way. They can defeat it in the ways they want to operate, that they don't need fascist tactics to do that. They don't need thug groups to win. Of course, they might change their mind in future. That's what the historical experience is, that capitalist politics does that. It uses fascism when it needs to defeat revolution. But that's the basic scenario. Also, just look at the political results. The far right is actually coalescing and growing stronger. We're actually moving into a situation more like some of the situations in European countries, where it is, you know, where in, you know, we have on the right has become the far right. The left, of course, needs to fight for democratic rights. And in fact, fudging it all in the middle is the sort of centrist politics of Labour parties or the Macrons of the world and so on. And in fact, in the long run, unless we actually mobilise from the left in the defence of democratic rights, of defence of people's freedoms, to defeat the far right, that centrist group will fall and the far right will come to power.
All right. So I want to go into the... Well, we're just running a bit out of time now and we want to kind of conclude this kind of interview, but we do have one last kind of question that kind of brings it back to this whole discussion about the Combating Anti-Semitism, Hate and Extremism Bill. So, Jonathan, we want to hear your final comments, but I also want to kind of hear your response to this kind of question about, you know, what is the solution? How do we develop effective anti-racism laws that actually protect people from discrimination? What are your comments on existing laws around racial vilification?
Okay, so we do have existing laws. I mean, we do have existing laws that deal with questions like violence, including racially motivated, you know, which would include racially motivated violence. On vilification, look, the key question probably is changing the political scene, because that would open up that would open up the discussion more generally for people to act and lead to a different understanding of what racism actually is. And it would also help empower people to use the existing laws. rather than have these laws that actually cut across people, the freedom of expression and the right of political communication.
Really, these laws, these criminal and migration laws, are not to combat hate, it's to control us. But
I mean, we've got to realise that the migration laws have been used to stop figures in the past, like Gerry Adams, leader of the Irish struggle, coming to Australia. That was actually overturned, but the introduction of these laws would actually strengthen the capacity to stop that happening. As the governments continue to try to do, the other thing is directed against the refugees.
Yeah. Well, we want to thank you very much, Jonathan, for taking the time to come on the show this morning.
Thank you.
And, yeah, you can read some of Jonathan Strauss's articles in Green Left, but we're going to go to a short break and come back with the Green Left calendar. Thanks, Jonathan. Have a good morning.
You too. Cheers.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast. Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And now it is time for the Green Left Activist Calendar. So just to highlight a few events that are coming up, but that is on Saturday, 31st of January, in an event organised by LASNET, there's going to be a fundraiser, Woman Weaving the Future, that's going to be happening at 6:30 p.m. at the Edinburgh Gardens Community Rooms at the Brunswick Street in Fitzroy North. Then on Sunday, February the 1st, there's going to be a rally, Israel's President Herzog Not Welcome Here, and it's going to be happening at 12 noon at the State Library. And that kind of precedes the big National Day of Action when Herzog actually arrives in the country, which is going to be on the 9th of January, 5:30 p.m. at Flinders Street. Some other events to kind of highlight is that there's going to be also a fun run for Gaza, Sudan and First Nations at 9 a.m. at Footscray Park in the Maribyrnong River Trail. Then there'll be a forum, Indigenous Struggles from the Philippines and in Gadigal, Nam, West Papua and Latin America. And that'll be happening at 3 p.m. at the QV Women's Centre in 2210 Longsdale Street in the city. Then there'll be a rally outside the US consulate, Hands Off Venezuela. Then there'll be a rally, Fight for Our Right to Protest, at 5:30 p.m. at the Parliament on Tuesday, February the 3rd. Then on Wednesday, February the 4th, there'll be a rally, Sunbury Waste Incinerator, that will be happening at 5 p.m. at the Parliament House, Spring Street in Melbourne. And then on Friday, the 6th of February, there'll be a film screening, Gunawara Nujuru, also known as We Fight, which is a First Nations documentary depicting the big protests and occupation of Mulgrave Park. And that'll be happening at 6:30 p.m. at the Resistance Centre on Friday, the 6th of February. Then just the last event I want to highlight is there's going to be a Northern Suburbs for Palestine 2026 Strategy Day, and that'll be happening from 12:30 p.m. till 5 p.m. at the Schoolhouse Studios, 28 Victoria Street in Coburg.
I must have missed it. Did you mention the Women Weaving the Future film?
Yes, I mentioned it. That's happening tomorrow night.
That's supporting Kurdish women, so make sure you get down to that. It's a good one. All right, we're going to go to hopefully our last interview of the show. We'll play another song for you. And thanks for requesting this song, a friend of the show, Aaron. It's called Rise by the Wakes. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and that song was The Wakes by Rise, and requested by one of our listeners. So thank you for that, Aaron. Now, we were going to bring you an interview from Palestinian activist May Saif, but we haven't been able to get through, and we think it's probably our fault for not confirming May. We know that lots of Palestine activists are really busy 24/7, and it is early in the morning. So apologies to that guest and to listeners. We were going to chat. I mean, we can still chat about it, Jacob, if you want to. We're really going to chat about the Israeli President Isaac Herzog's visit to Australia and the upcoming protests in response to Herzog.
Well, I might add a few things. I'm just drawing on the article that we've published in Green Left. There's been a kind of few things that have kind of said about Isaac Herzog, which is sort of a defence that the Albanese government has attempted to kind of make. So some Labor figures are sort of trying to make up this argument that you know, because the Isaac, because he, Isaac Herzog is from a different political party, from Netanyahu, and also the fact that he is not, he is very much more just, you know, the president in a sense, in terms of the Israeli political system, is generally more of a figurehead and not necessarily the one with the real sort of legislative power that a prime minister had. So the government is sort of trying to play this line that, okay, you know,
he's not Netanyahu.
So he, you know, because, you know, there's lots of debate and different divisions in Israeli society, because, you know, it's a democratic society where people are free to debate their differences openly.
Yeah.
But the reality is, this is where what Herzog actually stands for. He is not a moderate diplomat in any way.
Mm.
He is very much, he's the leader of a genocidal government who is responsible for the ongoing destruction of Palestinian people in Gaza and the occupied territories. Now, Herzog is named in the International Court of Justice Order on the genocide in Gaza. And the United Nations Commission of Inquiry found that he incited the commission of genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. And, of course, some moderate diplomat, but he was also photographed signing bombs to be dropped on Gaza in 2024. So Herzog just isn't a moderate diplomat. He bears responsibility for the deaths of more than 71,000 Palestinians, and he's responsible for the forced displacement of more than 2 million people and the escalation of settler violence in occupied West Bank. So I think, yeah, it's definitely going to be very important to support nationwide protests on Monday, February the 9th, and I think we need to join them to demand that the war, this war criminal be held account. So I think, yeah, check out Green Left for the listings of protests in your area. I think it will be a very kind of important protest to kind of attend in a lot of ways. So, yeah, I think it'll be very important to give him the kind of welcome that, you know, he deserves.
Yep, that's right. And I just wanted to also take the opportunity to plug Green Left's new podcast. It's called On the Streets, and it gives you a bite-sized updates about the protest movements and grassroots campaigns across the country. So if you don't want to hear us bang on for an hour and a half on radio, on live radio, which is also a podcast, by the way, so you can skip parts that you don't want to listen to, but this short podcast On the Streets, it's a good way to get the latest news. It's only 6 minutes for those of you who are really busy. In the latest episode, we do discuss the Invasion Day protests and solidarity protests with Rojava and promote upcoming events and rallies. You can find it on Podbean or greenleft.org.au/podcast. It's also on different platforms, but please support our work. If you do appreciate it, become a supporter. It's really easy to do. Just head to greenleft.org.au/support.
Three CR. Stay tuned. Stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources, and we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our lands.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now to step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our lands back. We demand to stop black deaths in custody.
We're going to go to another song by Christy Moore, who is a powerful vocalist and is a very passionate political person, folk singer, but he's a voice for the voiceless, and he's been singing for decades through, and yeah, his music has been like, it's been a window through which the world has viewed the struggle for justice and self-determination in Ireland in particular. His songs have taken listeners inside Britain's high-security prisons and amplified the voice of imprisoned revolutionaries. This is not one of his songs, but we just thought we'd play it. It's called Viva la Quinta Brigada.
And 10 years before I saw the light of morning, a comradeship of heroes was leaving. From every corner of the world came sailing the 15th International Brigade. They came to stand beside the Spanish people, to try and stem the rising fascist tide. Franco's allies met the powerful and wealthy. Frank Ryan's men came from the other side. Even the olives were bleeding as the battle for Madrid thundered on. The root and love against the force of evil, brotherhood against the fascist land. Bob Hillard was the Church of Ireland pastor. From Killarney across the Pyrenees he came. From Derry came a brave young Christian brother. Side by side they fought and died in Spain. Tommy Woods at 17 died in Cordoba. With the Fianac he learned to hold a gun. From Dublin to the Villa del Rio, where he fought and died beneath the Spanish sun. Viva la Quinta Brigada, no pastor and the pledge that men have fought. Had an empty the cry on the hillside. Let us remember them tonight. Many Irishmen heard the call of Franco, joined Hitler, Mussolini too. The propaganda from the pulpit and newspaper had Dodd Duffy to gather up his crew. And the word came from the church, support the Nazi. Men at Lofty failed again. The bishops blessed the blue shirts down in Galway as they sailed beneath the swastika to Spain. Viva la Quinta Brigada, no pastor and the pledge that made him fight. Adelante is the cry on the hillside. Let us remember them tonight. This song is a tribute to Frank Ryan, yet Conway and Denny Cody too, Peter Daly, Charlie Reagan and Hugh Bonner. Though many died, I can but name a few. Danny Boyle, Blazer Brown and Charlie Donnelly, Liam Tomlinson and Jim Straney from Short Strand, Jack Nelty, Tommy Patton and Frank Conroy, Jim Foley, Tony Fox and Dick O'Neill. Viva la Quinta Brigada, no pastor and the pledge that made him fight. Adelante is the crier on the hillside. Let us remember them tonight. Let us remember them tonight. Donna Gallagher.
You were just listening to a song by Christy Moore, Viva la Quinta Brigada, which I think means long live the 5th Brigade, but it's really meant to mean the 15th Brigade. I don't know why I said it wasn't his song. It is his song. I was thinking of Pete Seeger. That song is about the Irish Socialist Volunteers, who were a small contingent within the 15th International Brigade, about the commitments and exploits of the Irish radicals who volunteered to fight fascism in Spain.
Yeah, so we are getting to the end of our program. So I guess we would like to make a bit of a kind of plug. In terms of Green Left and Free CR Community Radio, you know, every week we're kind of bringing you the kind of stories that is not necessarily represented in the mainstream media, especially the corporate media. We're discussing the whole issue of the First Nation, of the bomb scare against the First Nations kind of protests early on. We're discussing giving the kind of alternative kind of left-wing view on these new hate speech laws that are being passed by the Albanese government. So, you know, every week we're attempting to kind of bring to you the kind of stories of the oppressed and the marginalised, and to kind of contribute to this fight for a better world. So yeah, I'd like to just kind of make a bit of a plug that, you know, if you support the kind of work we do, you know, consider becoming a subscriber, FreeCR Community Radio. You can become a subscriber by going on to freecr.org.au/subscribe. And then the other thing is you can also become a supporter of Green Left, the affiliate of this program. Becoming a Green Left supporter is only as little as $5 a month or $10 a month, and you can become a supporter by going on greenleft.org.au/support. Because at the end of the day, both FreeCR and Green Left, we don't get any money from corporate sponsorships. We are funded entirely by ordinary people like you who are currently listening to the program. So just want to make that kind of plug there. But yeah, I'd like to thank Jonathan Strauss for being on our program. Bit of a shame we weren't able to get May Safe on the program, but I mean, we can probably try and get her on next Friday, because actually the big protest will be happening on Monday, 5:30 p.m. on Monday the 9th of February. Oh, yeah. But also make sure you get to the first protest on the 1st of February, this Sunday at 12 p.m. at the State Library.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and stay tuned for the next show on 3CR, Left After Breakfast. Catch you next week.
This brings us to the end of the show. You have been listening to Friday Morning Breakfast with Green Left Radio, brought to you by Green Left Weekly Newspaper, which brings an alternative source of information that puts people and planet before profit.
If you like our work, become a supporter from $5 per month at greenleft.org.au/support or free call 1800 634 206.
Arise, you workers from your slumbers. Arise, you prisoners of want. For reason in revolt now thunders, and at last ends the age of Kant. Away with all your superstitions, serve all masses,
arise!
We'll change henceforth the old tradition and spurn the dust to win the prize. That's right, the commies are back, reds underneath your beds and that crap.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.